You gonna get out and like drive around with one of your parents?
Why are you asking that like you aren't one of my parents?
My dad took me out driving when I was a kid. It did not work out well.
We'll see what happens. Okay. You want me to drive around after I go to the dentist, which...
Look, do you want to drive before the dentist or after the dentist?
Preferably never in the dentist.
One of these days, you'll just be driving yourself to the dentist.
Unlikely. I need moral support.
I'm never going to the dentist again, is what you're saying.
I don't have dental insurance anymore.
Well, the good thing about medicine in the United States is it's not expensive. Anyway, speaking of bad teeth, we've got a British story today.
Ooh, we do.
Burn.
Burn.
Burn. Burn. Give me the fist bump. There it is. Wow. Hurts.
Did research on this story.
Yeah, you've been all into these stories recently.
Yeah. It's because I don't have anything else to do.
Good. Your lack of a life is a boon to this show.
Exactly.
Okay, first of all, I'm Phil.
And I'm Willow.
And it's Del Toro time.
It's Del Toro time. Woo!
Are not covering anything Del Toro related. This is probably
One Del Toroism. But we'll talk about that later.
This is probably one of the least Del Toro-y stories we've covered. Just in the sense that there's no monsters. So first of all, fabulous formless darkness.
Woo! Part of the Dark Descent.
Yeah. Fabulous formless darkness. What is the theme of this chunk?
Spooky ghosts.
Isn't it like the weird, like we think things are weird now, like we're not really sure what's going on, like that's kind of it. Yeah. Which
a
is
lot
weird.
Of industrialization so far.
Yeah. And what's strange about that theme in this story is I kind of think we know what's going on in this story,
but do we?
Yes, we
I
do
have some
because
theories.
I think personally it's fairly straightforward. What is this week's story?
This week's story is The Signal Man by Dickens.
The Signal Man. Does whatever a signal can.
That he does.
He does. He actually does. He does whatever a signal can, which is give a vague indication that something's about to happen. The Signal Man by Darles Chickens. Chuck Dick, Dickie the Chuckster. We love him. What can you tell us about Charles Dickens' life around... Because we've covered Dickens before. We talked about it with Oliver Twist and Great Expectations.
There's a few things that have happened in his life in the lead up to this.
Anything plot specific?
Well, I'm going to start at the beginning. Not at the beginning. I'm going to start at his birth. No, I have a few events that happened in his life and a few events that were happening in London at the time.
Great.
First, on a positive note, 1866 was the first year that Cadbury sold cocoa for drinking.
Hot dang. I did not know that. And that just makes the song, the story a little bit more. Hold on real quick. Yummy in my tummy.
The last cholera outbreak was happening this year as well. Killed 5,000
people. Last call for an outbreak.
That sucked. About 5 years before this happened, one of his sons married someone he didn't like. Charles didn't like the son, apparently.
I'm going to marry someone I don't like. Which I guess probably happened a lot back then.
Yeah. And then in 1863, his other son died in India after going into debt, and Charles refused to send him money, and he died of a... lung explosion. Not a lung explosion, like an artery in his his lungs exploded.
Died of a lung explosion. Funny though, that whole thing, the whole thread leading up to how his second son died, it's how you're gonna die, by the way.
Yep. Unfulfilled academic.
refuse to pay for you to get better when you're in India dying of a lung explosion.
But more apt to the story, although I do have some notes on other stuff. On June 9th of 1865, Charles Dickens was involved in a train accident called the Staplehurst accident. The cause of the accident appears to be the workmen were not signaling that there was a gap in tracks over a bridge, and the train went, like it does in the action movies, it stopped and the cars flipped over and killed
them. They fell over. It didn't, for our listeners,
they didn't flip over.
The train didn't, like, shoot off the bridge.
Yeah.
Like, it was, it wasn't a very, like, deep.
No.
But it was deadly.
Yeah, 10 people died, over 50 people were injured. Dickens writes about having, like, trying to help people and, like, walking past people, and they're, like, fine 1 minute, the next time he walks past them, they're dead. Mm-hmm. It was incredibly traumatic for him, obviously.
Yeah.
And he specifically didn't write about this. Because he was with his mistress at the time.
Yeah, his much younger mistress.
Mm-hmm.
She was how old? Like 20?
Yeah.
23. He was near the end of his life.
But there is another train incident involved that inspired this story.
Was it Thomas the Tank Engine?
No. On August 25th in 1861, there was an incident called the Clayton Tunnel Disaster, which inspired the first catastrophe in this story. And it was caused by a technological error in some of the equipment that signalmen used to signal each other back and forth when trains were coming. One of the buttons that they pressed didn't work, and so the danger signal never went out. And three trains had a big issue, and people died, and it was awful. But it did spark a lot of fear about train travel. And, you know, Dickens wasn't new to writing about trains. He'd been doing it since 1840s, I think.
Yeah.
Which was kind of during they call it railway mania, which is awesome.
It's important to remember that, like, train travel at this time was developing in leaps and bounds. Trains were bigger, they were faster,
mm-hmm.
they were heavier, so accidents were also more dramatic.
Yeah.
And it was train travel in America and in Europe like you said, it was this boom time for it.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, that also means there's way more accidents happening than there had been.
Also, the first railway murder in Britain occurred in 1864.
What's a railway murder? Does it involve Thomas the Tank Engine?
No. A person got murdered on the railway, and it sparked a lot of concern about whether or not the railways were raising the crime rate. I did a lot of reading about railways.
No, it's fascinating. Dickens was never happy as a train passenger in the first place. Many people weren't, because mm-hmm. they knew it was risky. And like you said, like after this big accident that he was involved in, he had trouble with trains for the rest of his life. What I found fascinating when reading about this was that the accident itself was caused by, like, there were like three elements, like
mm-hmm.
misreading the train table, because the train was called a tide train.
Yeah.
So it was dependent on when a ferry arrived, mm-hmm. which was dependent on when the tides were in. So the train was supposed to be scheduled like 2 hours earlier than the person mm-hmm. thought it was. So they were doing construction on the track when they thought the train wasn't going to arrive. And then this, like, the guy who was waving the flag to stop the train was supposed to be 1,000 yards from where the train was supposed to stop. But mm-hmm. he counted 1,000 yards using like telephone poles, which he thought were like a certain number of feet apart, but they were half that distance apart. So he was only like 500 yards away. Like, there were so many things that went into this accident. And I believe it was someone was found guilty of manslaughter and had to spend 6 months in jail. Like, it was, and then he ended up in an insane asylum for the rest of his life because he just went nuts from the guilt. Which this story is a lot about, like, weird guilt.
Yeah, I found it really interesting that, like, the two accidents that the story was based on were really heavily about miscommunication or lack of communication. And I think that comes pretty clear in this story. We should probably talk about what the story is about at some point.
The futility of communicate, like, so much of the story raises an interesting question about ghosts and premonitions and what's the point of a premonition if you don't know what it's telling you. Like, it's our signal, our eponymous signal man is just like, I'm getting these signs and I can't interpret them. And what is the point? Why is this thing tormenting me if I don't know what it's warning me about? Like, that's a theory, like, or an idea in a ghost story, which this isn't really, but it's a ghost story enough. But that I hadn't really thought about. Like, what if a ghost is trying to tell you something, but it's so vague that it's pointless? Yeah.
So what is this story about?
This is a story of a signal man doing whatever a it's a story of a nameless narrator who probably is supposed to be Charles Dickens.
Yep.
Who befriends the lonely signal man who is there to signal the trains in case of any problems down in, like, what do they call it, where the two sides come down to the track is below ground level. There's a tunnel. The steep. So it's always dark down there. The signalman's lonely. He's like the Maytag repairman, loneliest job in the world. He's like a lighthouse keeper.
It's compared to a dungeon a lot.
Yeah, and our narrator just happens to see this signalman down there, and he's like, hello, to below there. What does he say?
Halloa.
No, it's hello. Only the British in the 1860s could make the first word of your story hello and figure out the most complicated way to spell it.
The initial spelling of that, I think, was first documented in the 1700s.
Well, yes, but come on.
Actually, I think the first documented...
H-A-L-L-O-A, like...
Yeah, there's an extra A at the end because it was originally hallow, but there's also an A variation. I don't know. Etymology's weird.
Yeah, he says, hello, hello, hey, down below. And the signal man's like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Yep.
Because you find out that the signal man has been seeing a spirit or something that does that exact same thing.
Yeah. But before we move on to that, I want
to
say...
Before we get to the plot.
You said that this is the least Guillermo del Toro story, right?
All right.
Yeah, I found a del Toroism in it. On the second page, when he's going down to talk to the signal man, he mentions that it feels like he's entered another world, which is, in fact, a descent into the underworld.
A descent into the underworld. There we go. Also, Pinocchio shows up.
Yep, Pinocchio's there.
Pinocchio's there. He does a dance.
Yep.
Frankenstein comes wandering out. There's daddy issues.
Probably. I read that and that's immediately what I thought of, so.
No, it is. The down below where the signalman works is portrayed as another world. It's when you cross down into that area. Oh, by the way, this story is extremely short, too.
Yes, it is.
Like it pops along and it's done. It's one of the more straightforward stories insofar as, like, there's a conversation. There's another conversation. There's a twist. The end.
Yep.
And you're in and out. There's two characters, and then a few extras at the very end. And that's it. Like, it's a story and a story and then an ending.
Yep.
It was part of a collection of stories. I wanted to mention that Dickens wrote, or not just Dickens. Hold on, let me pull it up here. It was written as part of Mugby Junction.
Yeah, that was the one of the most well-known junctions. It was the most well-known junction in England at the time, and he hated it. You want to know why he had such a gripe with places, with railways, initially?
Why?
He hated railway refreshment rooms because of an incident in April of 1866.
That's right. I did read about that.
Yeah. Which is awesome.
uh, So Dickens, Charles Collins, Amelia Edwards, Andrew Halliday, and Hesba Stretton in the magazine All the Year Round, which Dickens was like the editor of, they collaborated on a series of short stories all set in and around Mugby Junction. And The Signalman was one of them. And so you sort of just, the stories were The Boy at Mugby, The Signalman, The Engine Driver, The Compensation House, The Traveling Post Office, and The Engineer. And it was just sort of this collection of stories for Christmas. And Dickens wrote the spooky one. Like one of the stories was a scary story set in and around this town, this area. And I read it in, I read that collection. So I pulled, you can find a photocopy on like archive.org of the actual publication. And so I was like, I want to read it like the way a person would have read it back in the day, as like a column, like in a magazine. And it was interesting to read it that way, just sort of bookended by other stories. So you got like, ooh, that was a spooky. And then you move on to the next Mugby Junction tale. And then Thomas the Tank Engine showed up. It was amazing. He's a very useful engine. So yeah, so I just wanted to put that out there. Originally published in Mugby Junction, the collection Mugby Junction, All the Year Round, and then in about 5,000 other ghost story collections between then and now. If you've ever bought a collection of like more than 20 ghost classic ghost stories, chances are pretty good the Signalman's in there.
Our editor David G. Hartwell.
Yes, what is the Hartman
says that
have
this
to say?
Is his best horror story.
Whose best horror story?
Dickens.
Dickens.
It also says that The Signalman is something else entirely. A penetrating psychological story and a disturbingly ambiguous questioning of the nature of reality. A story of nameless horror.
Nameless horror. He says it is perhaps Dickens' best horror story. So he leaves it a little open to interpretation.
Yeah.
Yeah, Charles Dickens being the author also of A Christmas Carol.
What? No way.
Another story with ghosts in it about the future.
Almost as if my sweeping statement from last episode about everyone being terrified of the future is accurate.
So what happens is he befriends the Signalman, who is a very intelligent man. You get kind of a little bit of the Signalman's history. He's like,
was studying natural philosophy.
Which was what they used to call
science.
Yeah. I am currently reading a book on the history of natural philosophy in Rome, ancient Rome.
It's so much fun. And I loved that part of my classes.
And it's a great book. I highly recommend it. I'm working my way through it. It's very technical and complicated, but yeah, the history of scientific thought. So this guy was like a smart guy, a well-read guy. He just sort of talks about how he squandered his youth. He squandered all of his, like, just sort of tossed away his education on who knows what.
I feel like there's a bit of projection in there.
Yeah.
About maybe his other son.
Could be. Dickens criticizing the youth of today.
Well, because the guy talks about how, like, he takes like full accountability for his actions and is like, I don't expect anyone to help me. I got myself into this hole. This is where I belong. And I'm just like,
I did want to say that the story, the bad experience Charles Dickens had at Mugby Junction involved a waitress not recognizing him. Like that was his big, like, I hate this place so much just because someone did not know that he was Charles Dickens. That's his trauma from Mugby Junction. Charles Dickens, a progressive thinker in the sense that he believed in social justice. He believed the poor should be treated well. He believed that everyone should have a house over their head, a roof over their head, food to eat, that the children should not be put to work, that orphans should not be treated as free labor. Like, he was progressive in that sense. He was not progressive in a lot of other ways. And I believe, wasn't he separated from his wife by that point, by the time of the accident? I thought she had ditched him.
Well, yeah, because she was really distraught over their son's death, and he was like, eh.
Eh. He also met his mistress through Wilkie Collins, through the theater. She was an actress. She was a famous actress. Because you got to remember that Dickens was a theater guy.
Yep.
Which is the worst.
As we all know.
He's the worst.
Yeah.
And Dickens actually performed on stage in Wilkie Collins' plays, like with Wilkie Collins. Can you imagine going to the theater and like tonight the role of the butler will be played by Charles Dickens? And he's like, hi, everyone. Sorry, the guy couldn't be here tonight, so I'm stepping. It's like, oh, wow, I guess that happens sometimes.
That'd be like going to the theater, going to like a Broadway show, and they're like, so the role of blah, blah, blah is being played by J.R.R. Tolkien?
Yeah. It's like when Our Town came out, and sometimes if you went to see Our Town in its initial run, during some shows, Thornton Wilder was just playing the stage manager. He was just, you get up there and there's, oh, it's Thornton Wilder in the lead of this production of Our Town. Like, Dickens would just pop up on stage. So, yeah, he met this woman, and they were together for a long time.
He was with her and her mother during the accident.
Yeah. We don't know much about their relationship because, like, all correspondence about their relationship
Didn't he dramatically burn them?
His family did. His sons were like, his children were like,
he wrote to what's his face, Wilkie Collins, about burning a bunch of stuff. And the thing that I was reading made a comment that was like, probably the most expensive bonfire ever.
Yeah, no kidding. Authors tended to do that a lot once upon a time. Well, look at Franz Kafka. None of his stuff was published during his lifetime, and then he demanded all of his writings be destroyed when he died, and fortunately no one did, because we would not have Kafka's entire publishing history if we did that. I hate that so much. Like, you know what? You're dead, dude. Let us enjoy the mistakes of your life. But she has had biographies written about her as well.
Isn't she called the Invisible Woman?
Well, she was actually invisible. That's what you're thinking. You couldn't actually see her. That's why she was cast in so many things. She played a lot of specters.
I just know something was written called The Invisible Woman.
Ellen Ternan, by the way. Ternan. There's a biography written on her called The Invisible Woman. There's a movie about her called The Invisible Woman. She's played by Felicity Jones, star of Rogue One. And Charles Dickens, played by Ralph Fiennes. Ralph Fiennes directed the movie, tried to get someone else to play Charles Dickens, and he was like, ah, screw it, I'll play Charles Dickens. Also a character. Dan Simmons wrote a novel called Drood about the writing of Drood, Edwin Drood, and she's a character in that, obviously, because Dickens was working on that at the end of his life. I kept saying his mistress. Ellen Ternan was a person in her own right, an autonomous human being, and a talented actress worthy of her own story and biography. So, sorry, Ellen.
Lovely woman.
You're awesome. Lovely woman. Yep. So was her mom.
Yeah.
If you look at her, Frances Eleanor Jarman, quite a person herself.
All right. We should continue with the story.
I was going to say a real looker, and then I was like, that would just be rude. Her sister, Frances Eleanor, also married was related to the Trollope family. She married Anthony Trollope's brother, Thomas Adolphus Trollope. So, like, the Dickens, the Wilkie Collins, Charles Dickens, Anthony Trollope, like, that whole, like, literary circle, they were just all sleeping with each other and stuff.
I mean, that's just how that goes in the end.
That's who you know.
Yeah. There's
also
no internet.
They couldn't just hop on Plenty of Fish. They had to sleep with actresses in plays they liked.
Exactly. But the story.
So, The Signal Man.
Our main character has these conversations with this guy, and the guy's like, I'm being bothered by something, but I'm not going to tell you unless you come back again.
Every once in a while in the middle of their conversation, he's like, oh.
Yep.
Oh, never mind.
Yep. Buttons. The guy, obviously our narrator's like, well, I'm going to come back, so just tell me when to come back. The guy's like, yeah. I get off at 11 tomorrow, or 10 tomorrow, right. And our main character's like, I'll come at 11. Just show up, and the guy's like, all right, so here's
the
thing.
When you show up, for God's sake, do not stand at the top of the hill and shout down, hello below there. Please don't ever do that again. You freak me out.
Yep. Guy comes back. Our signal man is like on edge and nervous. He's always on edge and nervous, it would seem. They keep talking, and our signal man's like, all right, look, I've been seeing stuff. About like a few years back, I saw this ghost. And our narrator's like, it's just a figment of your imagination, and it's just the sound of the wind. And the guy's like, no. After I saw the ghost, there was an accident. And our main guy's like, okay, well, that's a weird coincidence. And our character's like, no, I saw the ghost again. And our narrator's like, you keep letting me interrupt you. You should stop doing that. And this time the ghost was like in mourning, and then a young woman died in one of the boxcars. And now he's seeing the ghost again, and he doesn't know why.
Right. He's kind of vague on how the woman in one of the passenger cars died.
Mm-hmm.
Does he see her? I can't really remember how they handle that.
He sees her? I'm looking back at the book for our podcast listeners.
Searching through the book. This first was a train crash. Then a beautiful young woman died in a train passing through.
Yeah.
Like it's very.
And there was.
He doesn't.
There's no way to signal, like, the driver of the train, so he had to, like, run off and tell the person. It was... Yeah.
Yeah. I will tell you this, in the BBC, in the Ghost Stories for Christmas television adaptation of it, it is a woman in a bridal gown leaning out of a window... going like, ah! And then she like hits something and then she falls out of the train. And then she has like a bloody nose and she's dead. And it's the funniest thing I've ever seen. It's the second funniest part of that particular Ghost Stories for Christmas. A 40-minute long, very slow dramatization of the signal man starring a brilliant Denholm Elliott. But I'll talk about it at the end of this. So yeah, this woman just dies. So he's like, I saw... someone, what was it? They were like covering their face.
Yeah.
And they were like gesturing with their hand.
Mm-hmm.
And then like at one point they, now that it's shouting, hello, below there or below down there or down there, below there. And he's freaked out because this is the third time he's seen this spirit and he doesn't know what this is going to like. Now what? His bell will ring. He'll run out there. He'll see the ghost. It'll shout at him. And he's like, I don't know what this means. And what I think is hilarious is the narrator is like, come here. Like, look, I don't see a ghost right now. It's all in your head. And I'm like, well, dude, the ghost isn't there right now.
Yeah.
And he's like, I didn't hear the bell ring. So obviously there's no ghost. And I'm like, well, dude, if it's a premonition, like maybe he's the only one. Like, that's the point of the.
Yeah. It's a weird ghost. I got banshee vibes from it.
But it's not a.
It's not a ghost. It's a premonition.
Yeah, it's a psychic projection.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. Okay, so how does the story end? Because
the story
they
ends.
They talk about this for a long time, and then he goes.
The story
home
ends. Our narrator leaves, and then comes back the next day, and he's like. There's a bunch of people here. And everyone's like, yeah, the signal man died. And he's like, what? And they go into, like, how it happened. And it's revealed that the guy who's telling the story was, like, trying to warn the signal man of what was going on. But he didn't want to see the signal man die. So he covered his arms and, like, waved or he covered his eyes and, like, waved to get the signalman to stop and repeated the same words the signalman had said before.
Yeah, the signalman was standing on the train tracks for reasons we don't, well, we'll never know.
Yeah.
And the train was barreling down on him, and the signalman just stood there, and the conductor was like, hello, down below. Get the hell out of the way. It's a train. It's a whole it's a whole ass train.
It's a big ass train.
There's one thing in your job that comes through this hole.
Well, that leads me to one of my theories.
Okay.
Because from, like, part of me, like, I interpreted this as he kept hearing these warnings that weren't actually happening, and that caused him to ignore the one that actually did happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I'm like, is it warning of death, or is it somehow causing these deaths? Because it seems like he wouldn't have died if the ghost precognition thing wasn't there.
Right, if he had just stayed in his hut until the signals arrived.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the ghost didn't help in the first two ways. Like, the first two accidents still happened.
In fact, it seems like it kind of caused the first one if the signal guy wasn't in there and then the crash happened. Because the signal guy ran off into the tunnel. Like, it...
Is it a malevolent psychic projection? It's weird because the theory is what he was seeing was actually a... The conductor warning him the whole time, get out of the way. And then it happened. So it's this, premonition. But again, like you said, like, if he hadn't been so freaked out about this thing he kept seeing, he would have just sat in his little hut and been okay.
Yep.
It is weird. And I think that's why, for me, the story works so well, is because it's mostly just tragic. It's this sad...
Mm-hmm.
Like, a weird thing is happening and a guy dies because of it, and it didn't have to happen, but the universe is weird and capricious, and it's not like it's a haunted railway or anything. It's just this one guy who's, like, I guess a little psychic or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
He gets squished by the train.
Yeah. It's awful.
I will tell you that in the adaptation of it. Hold on, I'm gonna pull this up so you can see. In the BBC, the Ghost Stories for Christmas adaptation of The Signalman, Denholm Elliott plays the Signalman, and he's very good. It's Denholm Elliott. He's a great actor. But it ends with him getting hit by the train.
Mm-hmm.
Which is an actual, like, moment in the story. And the train goes, choo-choo. And then you hear, and then Denholm Elliott goes like this. And you hear, like, you literally hear a squish sound.
Oh, boy.
And I'm going to pull this up because it's wild. You actually see his body.
Okay.
Like, they don't shy away from it because this is television. You see the tragic results of what happens when a train crushes another human body. And what happens is, here, I'll show you. Ah. Bear with me, ladies and gentlemen. This is a very difficult, delicate procedure. What happens is down
it's
on
not
the train.
Working. Okay, there we go.
You lay down on the train tracks. the shot of Denholm Elliott having been killed by a train that caused an actual squishing sound, is you see him laying on his face in the middle of a train track, clearly resting his forehead on his hand, because they had poor Denholm Elliott lay on a real train track.
Goodness.
So it's clearly uncomfortable. So he rests his head on his hand, and then he's bracing his weight with his other hand because it's very uncomfortable down there on the ground. It is the least dead body looking dead body.
He just tripped and fell.
It looks like he just is throwing a tantrum. It looks like he's like, I won't get up. And otherwise, okay, so the Ghost Story for Christmas adaptation is very long feeling, as many of these are. There's a lot, it's mostly just conversation. They do, like, reenactments of the accidents. Mm-hmm. Like I told you, the bride is hilarious. She's like, no! And then she, like, falls out of the train for no reason. The crash is pretty graphic in that there's, like, a lot of fire and, like, screaming mm-hmm. and stuff. And then this final one where it's just like, oh, no. It accentuates kind of how absurd his death seems because he's just sort of standing on the tracks.
Yeah.
And then it hits him. But the performances are great. Like, the acting's great. It's England, so he's the top of the line actors in this. There's another adaptation done for the TV series Suspense that I could not find. I found several recordings of the radio adaptation from Suspense, where they changed the narrator to Agnes Moorehead, and it's a woman, and they mm-hmm. have her be a reporter doing okay. like for a magazine, like, I'm interviewing people around the countryside about their jobs that people might not know about. I thought it'd be interesting mm-hmm. to talk to the signalman. But they also have Agnes Moorehead's character, the narrator, be the one who he's been seeing. He's like, wait a minute, I've seen you warning me off. And then you find out that, like, she actually sees the train coming at the end and tries to warn him. But then he's like, oh, it's the ghost again. And he gets hit by the train. It actually makes it make a little bit more sense because mm-hmm. he's like, I don't know what's real anymore. But
that's just the ghost causing problems.
The ghost causing havoc, because if not, he would, again, be safe in his little hut and not have anything to worry about.
Yep.
But I like this story.
Yeah, it's a good story. It's fun.
Yeah, it's sad. It's fun. It's weird. It's spooky. Like, it's got mm-hmm. a nice vibe to it. Dickens was good at, like, a spooky vibe. And it feels like something that you would hear. Like, it feels like a, like, just, oh, there's a signal. Like, it sounds like a story someone would tell you, like, on a, like at night. Like, if you want a spooky story, mm-hmm. here's a weird thing. Yeah, the signal man. Yeah. Messing around with his signal plan.
A lot of fun history stuff.
A lot of fun history. Dickens had a fascinating life. Mm-hmm. He was a very active boy. He wasn't the nicest guy to his family. He's one of those people who, like, was his friends really liked him. His family had a lot of problems with him.
Yeah.
Kind of like Jim Henson. People love Jim Henson. Then there's his family. Because Dickens did a lot of world. He did a lot of world traveling. He came to America a lot to do performances. He was a, you know, raconteur, a performer.
Some people Dickens. Just aren't meant to be family men.
Not meant to be family mans. Liked other things a little too much. So this story, here's an interesting thing. Andrew Lloyd Webber really wanted to turn The Signal Man into a musical. And could not get anyone at all interested in adapting it.
I'm not surprised.
He wanted to make it the second half of the musical Tell Me on a Sunday, which is really interesting. Tell Me on a Sunday is a two-act musical. It's called Song and Dance. The first half is called Tell Me, and it's a one-woman musical. The second half is a dance performance. Mm-hmm. He wanted the second half to actually be a musical adaptation of The Signal Man, basically a two-person musical. But they couldn't get it to work. The producers were like, no, it's a weird idea. It's not going to work. So when he wrote the musical adaptation of The Woman in White, which is based on the Wilkie Collins mm-hmm. novel, The Woman in White,
he actually
interpolated elements of The Signal Man into The Woman in White. So there's, like, premonition ghosts that are just flatly taken from The Signal Man because he just loves the story so much. Not unlike when Andrew Lloyd Webber wanted to base a musical on everyone, Thomas the Tank Engine. He couldn't get the rights, and so he wrote Starlight Express because he was like, dang it, I'm going to write my musical about trains. But it started off as a Thomas the Tank Engine adaptation, but that's why the Really Useful Group, Andrew Lloyd Webber's production company, is called the Really Useful Group, because it's named after Thomas the Tank Engine, who's a really useful engine.
Thomas the Tank Engine. Full circle. Wilkie Collins really liked trains.
Why do you say that?
That's what I'm picking up from this conversation.
Charles Dickens, Wilkie Collins, Andrew Lloyd Webber, train boys.
Connected. I meant to say time. Webber really liked trains, not Collins.
I bet Wilkie Collins liked trains as well.
He was friends with Charles Dickens, who apparently wrote a lot about trains.
Choo-choo. Did he write a lot about trains?
I don't know. Apparently he wrote about trains from the 1840s to however long, so...
Apparently there's an episode of Poltergeist The Legacy titled The Signalman that's inspired by the story. And as we mentioned last time, The Unquiet Dead, the Doctor Who episode where Doctor meets Charles Dickens, mentions The Signalman.
To be fair, there's also premonition ghosts in that episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And this story has been adapted into so many radio dramas. Like, it's because it's so easy, because it's mostly just conversation and sound anyway. Like, you don't have to show anything.
No, you don't.
Yeah. The Signalman.
Good story.
Anything else? Any other thoughts?
No, I don't think so. He used some fun language in the story. I was really confused at the very first line of this story.
Yeah.
When he says, just the segment of the first sentence where he says, at the door of his box, I was like, what are you talking about?
Hold on, I'm coming out of me box.
I was like, I assume it has like a train box? Wait, I don't.
Train box.
He just says at the door of his box.
Signal
I'm going man. To assume that's the signal man's like box.
His little box, his little hat, yeah. His little hatch, his little
but
hole.
I was really confused at first.
The Signalman by Charles Dickens. Now, this is arguably, as we said, we've had our theories, but this is a fairly straightforwardish story. So let's talk about a story that's not as straightforward. What is next week's foray into this fabulous formless darkness?
Crouch End by Stephen King.
Crouch End by Stephen King, a short story that changed my life. And got me back into reading horror stories at a young age. I read Crouch End when it first dropped in I think Nightmares and Dreamscapes, and was just like, I want more of this. Where can I find more stories like this? So, I'm excited. I've read Crouch End a billion zillion times. It's a great story, and it's fun, and it's great.
I may have read it. I've read a lot of Stephen King's short stories. We'll see.
We'll see when you join us next
you
time for...
You may have read it to me at some point.
Crouches, I may have, because I've read you a lot of stories. Just finished the final book in Stephen King and Richard Chismer's Gwendy series. I read Gwendy's Button Box, Gwendy's Magic Feather, and I just finished Gwendy's Final Task. Cried like an infant at the end of it. So if you want to know if it's a good book, it was a good book. So still keeping up with that King. You dropped this, Stephen King.
What did he drop?
No, he dropped this, King. It's a reference. Never mind.
Oh,
any
no,
case,
I know. I usually hear people say you drop this crown. I don't just...
I always hear you drop this, King, and you see a person putting a crown on somebody's head.
I guess I only ever hear it verbally, so people need to, like...
Oh. I've only seen it as a meme. So, in any case, boy, this is old person talk.
I feel like you understand internet culture more than I do, so...
This is how old people talk about internet culture. This episode will be popping up on YouTube like all of our episodes do. You're trying to get a driver's license, and I found out that my cholesterol is elevated, so I'm going to try to eat better and get some exercise.
You should get Pikmin. You should get the Pikmin game app.
But I don't want to go outside.
But you should do it anyways. You don't have to go outside. It counts the steps that you do, like, stationary.
Maybe I'll play your Pikmin game. I don't know. I don't know anything. If you're out there in La La Land, please play Pikmin. That's my free advertising for it. next time we're going to be talking...
Nintendo needs our advertising.
We're going to be talking about Stephen King for the first time in a while. Since the Monkey. I think the Monkey was the last time we talked about Mr. King. And I'm Phil.
And I'm Willow.
And we'll see you when it's Del Toro time.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.